The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. It's time to bring out the Better Worldian in all of us. Welcome to Better Worldians Radio with your hosts, Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. Better Worldians Radio inspires you with the people and ideas that are making the world a better place. You'll hear how small acts can make a big difference every day. Now, here are Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory.
Hi, this is Ray Hansel. Welcome to Better Worldians Radio. Better Worldians Radio is a weekly broadcast whose mission is to uplift and inspire you to make the world a better place. Every week we are speaking with best-selling authors, film producers, TED speakers, happiness experts, and also everyday folks just like you, people whose small acts make a big difference in the world. We call them Better Worldians. And speaking of Better Worldians, let me now introduce you to my co-hosts, Mary Sue Hansel and Gregory Hansel. Mary Sue has been a successful entrepreneur and business executive for over 30 years. She's also an avid practitioner of the healing arts, positive psychology, and spirituality. And now, here's my life partner, Mary Sue.
Hi, everyone. It's great to be here with you today to share all the good that's being done in the world. Now, let me also introduce Greg Hansel. Gregory has a background in philosophy and world religions, and most importantly, has spent over 15 years at the intersection of technology, social causes, and big ideas.
Hi, this is Greg. I'm so glad you can all join us here at Better Worldians Radio. Let me tell you a bit first about my dad, Ray, who you just heard from. He's a serial entrepreneur who successfully founded with Mary Sue Took Public a national marketing firm. Giving back's always been really important to Dad, who supports cancer research, disabled children, and disadvantaged families. And by the way, we're the family team that created the popular social game on Facebook called A Better World. It rewards players for doing good deeds while helping to raise money and awareness for charity. To date, over 14 million good deeds have been done in A Better World by over 2.5 million people. And that includes over 77,000 just this past week alone. In the month of March, we're supporting the Miracle Foundation, which supports orphans in India. This week on Better Worldians Radio, we are discussing how to flourish in your life and in business.
Joining us today is Steve Moeller, author of Endorphinomics. Steve is a successful entrepreneur, author, speaker, business consultant, and life coach. He has trained thousands of investment advisors to help their clients flourish in retirement. A student of many disciplines, Steve founded Endorphin Zone New Media to share his holistic strategies for flourishing with people of all ages and walks of life. Steve, it's so great to have you joining us today on Better Worldians Radio. Thank you for coming on board.
Very happy to be here. Thank you.
You're very welcome. I'd like to begin our conversation in this segment with your book, Endorphinomics. What does that mean?
Endorphinomics. Well, it's a combination of two words, endorphins and economics. And endorphins, of course, are those naturally occurring neurotransmitters that when we're feeling fantastic, they're triggered in our brain and they create that warm, glowing, sort of euphoric feeling. So endorphins are a metaphor for positivity, happiness, all those great feelings when we're in a positive mood. And then, of course, economics. So endorphinomics is really the combination of maximizing your financial independence and your quality of life. So the balance between sort of the head and the heart, you know, the pocketbook and the quality of life issues.
What an interesting concept. Now, you talk in your book about contrasting lifestyles between your father and your stepfather. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I joke sometimes that I grew up in two dysfunctional families, and that my mom was divorced and remarried, and my dad remarried, so I had two separate families, and they were almost completely opposite ends of the spectrum. My dad was German and very severe, driven, maybe a little bit angry, very conservative, I would say pretty uptight guy. But he was very successful financially, and he had a lot of options in his life, and he really was able to do a lot of things that my other family wasn't able to do. So my stepfather was a complete bohemian and had lots of wild and crazy friends, and they had a difficult time in my family I grew up with financially. But they had a lot of love, they just had a lot of subjective experiences and feelings about life that were much, much happier and better than my dad. So there was kind of a conflict between my two families. Neither one of them was ideal. When I was 13, I made a choice. I made a conscious decision. I can very clearly remember that day when I had this aha moment that, wow, what if I took the best from both families, the happiness, the love, the affection that for my stepfather's family, my mom's family, but the financial success and the security and the personal growth that I saw associated with my dad's quality of life and his lifestyle. So best of both was really what I decided to do at 13, and really that's what endorphinomics is all about.
Mm-hmm. Taking the best of both. Okay, that's interesting. So you were influenced even back then, before you even had the concept of endorphinomics, about taking the best of both.
Right, and I had no idea, of course, how to do it back then, but I just had this aha that wouldn't that be great if you could, leave the bad and take the good and synergize or synthesize that into a different way of living life.
Oh, how interesting. Now, before you met your client, Toby, you were primarily helping people increase their financial success. So what happened with this meeting with Toby that began to change the way you look at things?
Well, I had been, studied success and money and business, and I had become a business consultant, was working with financial advisors, investment advisors for about 5 years. I met Toby at a conference where we both spoke in Aspen, and he was the top producer for his firm, and I was one of the keynote speakers. We ended up sitting at the same table. He appeared very, very successful and very happy, and boy, the other people at the conference just looked up to Toby like he was the ideal financial advisor, and everyone wanted to be like him. And he'd made about $3 million the year before, so he was extremely financially successful. And in that field, that industry, that's all they focus on typically is just, the financial side. So at that conference, we both live in Orange County, Southern California. So he said, "Hey, Steve, I've got a little project I'd like to talk to you about when we're both back in California. So why don't you give me a call and let's get together." So I thought, well, fantastic. He's a really successful advisor. I wasn't quite sure how I could help him because he seemed to have everything going on that everybody wanted that I was working with. But what happened is when I met with him, he had an incredibly beautiful office. I waited a little while in the lobby. I've been in lots and lots of financial advisors' offices. It was one of the nicest I've ever been in. But when I went in to meet with him, it was kind of a big surprise because after a little bit of small talk, he basically kind of broke down and he told me that he was miserable and that although he was making a ton of money, his quality of life was just horrible and his wife was thinking about leaving him and he's having trouble with his daughter. He was really stressed. I could see him kind of shaking. And he asked me if I could help him find something to buy his business.
Mm.
Well, here I thought this guy was a peak of success and I was going to help him get to the next level. And all of a sudden, he's telling me, this is terrible. I got to get out. And he said, this stress is killing, or this success is killing me.
Mm.
And it turns out that he created a business that was very dysfunctional. And although in one dimension, it was extremely successful and he was a role model, by my evaluation of what really counts, your subjective life experience, he was failing it, completely. So that was a huge turning point. That one day, that one meeting with Toby was a huge turning point for me.
You came face to face with what we used to call a mournful millionaire.
Mournful?
Mournful millionaire. Yep.
Yeah, I call him a successful miserable person.
Successful miserable. Yeah, it comes back to saying, I guess, what we all hear, that money can't buy happiness. But you were helping your clients make more money, but at the same time, you shifted to that increasing their happiness. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, there is that. Even though we all know it's true in our brains, somehow emotionally we all think, well, yeah, just give me a shot. I'd just like to try. Just give me more money. I'm sure I'll be happier. But the reality is, without money, we're miserable. I mean, I tried poverty in college. It really didn't work for me, guys. So you have to have a certain level of income, but the thing is that you need the balance. You need a reasonable amount of income so you can support yourself effectively and you can plan for your future. But you also have the balance in life where essentially your life experience is moment by moment what emotional state you're in. Are you in a positive state or a negative state? And so a good life, a life well lived, is a life that has a preponderance of positive emotions and very few negative emotions. And what I found, a lot of these people were putting up with a lot of negative emotions, a lot of stress, in order to make money, thinking if they made enough money, they'd eventually be happy. So I started calling that the American happiness myth. If I work real hard, put up with a lot of stress, and make a lot of money, someday I'll be happy. Actually, what happens someday, you're even more miserable and you want to sell your business because you've just created something that's really a monster for you. So I really shifted at that point and started focusing on quality of life and trying to figure out how could I help my clients have it all, just like I wanted. The balance between the financial success and the quality of life that is really critical that ultimately we all need if we're going to have a good life.
And so you went about shifting your business to that direction.
Yeah, I shifted, and it was kind of hard. This was in the early to mid-90s, and I had been interested in flourishing. I sort of at that point had kind of locked on to, well, flourishing is about financial success, thinking that, again, you know, if you have enough financial success, that somehow naturally, automatically, all these other things will fall into place, and you'll either figure it out or it'll magically happen, you'll be happy. But there was very little empirical research that I could find at that point. And I started to study and think and go to conferences and read. But what I found is there was a tremendous amount of research on depression, stress, negative emotions and negative experiences, but very, very little research at that point, at least it was available to me as a layperson, really organized research on what's now called positivity, positive psychology, and positive emotions. So I started just thinking about it, and I really thought about balancing the head and the heart, doing things that you like to do. A big part of what I did at that point was shift focus to helping the advisors at least clarify what their personal strengths were, I call personal powers, so that they could be doing things that they enjoyed doing and then create a team around them that would do things that were out of their comfort zone and they didn't like to do. So it was a slow process, but I did make a conscious decision and started working more in a focused approach to let's try to build our businesses in a way that really enhances our happiness, our positivity, and our subjective feelings about how we're doing, not just the bank account.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. That must have been an interesting space to be in after you arrived at the other side to now suddenly be focusing on both of these things, straddling the financial success at the same time looking at success from a broader perspective in terms of achieving happiness in the process.
Yeah, it had been something I'd been thinking about my whole life, but the meeting with Toby really crystallized the fact that I had to, you know, change my my business model and essentially raise my game to be more focused around what people, you know, what I realized, guys, was that I could help them increase their income, and at the same time it would decrease their quality of life. And I thought, that's not really helping these people, and I don't think that's a very good business model that people would want, you know, would be attractive for folks. Yeah, I made a ton of money, but he destroyed my life. You know, working with this guy, I didn't think that was a good thing I wanted people to say about, you know, what I'd done. I wanted my clients to have what I wanted, which was to have it all, to have financial success and a high quality of life. And it took me a while to figure that out, and I know I studied with scientists, I studied with shamans, I did a lot of reading, a lot of soul searching. But eventually I really did figure out, and that's now what I do for all of my clients, is we can do both if we start off with that in mind and we, you know, we work towards that. But we can't do it if we only focus on money, hoping magically if we get enough, we'll be happy.
Oh, and you can't take it with you, as they often say.
That's right.
Steve, as we go to break, I want to share your purpose statement with our listeners. On Chapter 6, you actually state your single-sentence purpose, and it goes like this. I inspire people to imagine and create more success and happiness in their lives and a more peaceful, sustainable world for all. Now, that's quite a statement. So we're going to chew on that while we take a break. We're going to take a break right now, but I'd like to offer this challenge to our listeners. If you know someone whose acts, no matter how small, are making a difference in the lives of other people, please, we'd love to hear about them. Tweet us at #BetterWorldians so we can let the Better Worldian community know. We'll talk more with Steve Mohr when we come back. You can learn more at betterworldians.com and follow our live tweets at twitter.com/betterworldians. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
How can we make it a better world?
I think we can make it a better world if we had peace among each other.
Everybody needs to help their neighbor, and then it will spread from then on.
I should do more.
I could do more. I spend so much time on Facebook.
How much time do I spend on Facebook?
Probably more than I should be spending.
I would definitely get back if I could find the time.
Now you can help others just by playing a game on Facebook. It's called A Better World. Share your hopes and dreams. Do good deeds. Make a difference. And have fun. Become a Better Worldian. Join a community where all good deeds get rewarded. Log in today to find out how you can make a difference every day.
For more information, visit facebook.com/abetterworld.
Be part of a miracle this holiday season. Visit colorwithkindness.com and watch an uplifting 2-minute video that illustrates the power of kindness. When the video reaches 1 million views, funds will be released to Cure International for surgeries enabling 10 kids to walk for the first time. Cure is the largest provider of reconstructive surgery to disabled children in the emerging world. Give these kids the gift of a lifetime. Watch and share the video at colorwithkindness.com.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Better Worldians Radio, with a family team of Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. To connect with the show today, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send us an email to radio@betterworldians.com. Now, back to Better Worldians Radio.
Hi, we're back live with Steve Moeller, author of Endorphinomics. We'll talk more with Steve in a moment, but first, we'd like to share some big news here at Better Worldians Radio. We've recently launched a worldwide kindness campaign. We're challenging Better Worldians around the globe to watch a 2-minute video that illustrates the power of kindness. When it reaches a million views, we'll release funds for surgeries that will allow 10 kids in the developing world to walk for the first time. Please watch the video, share it with your friends at colorwithkindness.com. That's colorwithkindness.com. And now, let's welcome back Steve and Mary Sue.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Mary Sue.
Hi. Would you share with us your definition of flourishing and explain why that's so important in your work?
Well, flourishing is, I think, sort of a higher level concept than just happiness, because it includes happiness in a number of other things. So, kind of give you a little bit of a technical explanation. Scientists look at this as in three different elements of flourishing. One is objective well-being. And objective well-being is everything that you can measure. It's your income, your education, your, the number of square feet of your dwelling where you live, your blood pressure. It's all those objective things about your life. And, when people have, a very high standard of living, that's where their objective well-being is high. So standard of living, objective well-being, pretty much the same terms. But again, it's generally external, but it's always measurable. It's tangible, something you can measure. Then there's subjective well-being, which you really can't measure. That's about your internal life experience. And that's typically what we refer to as happiness, but scientists refer to that as positive emotions. So in order for your subjective well-being to be high, you have to have a substantially more positive emotional experiences every day than negative. In fact, you actually have to have about 3 to 1, 3 times as many positive experiences as negative. So then you'll be happy. So subjective well-being is happiness. It's a simple term. Objective well-being is standard of living. So that's sort of the external world and the internal world. And then the third element is perhaps extremely important, is personal growth. And personal growth is what Abraham Maslow referred to as self-actualization. It's moving towards who you really are, becoming more of your highest self, and really reaching your full potential. So if you have a high standard of living and you have lots of happiness or positivity in your life and you're growing personally and evolving in ways that are meaningful to you, then you're flourishing. So that's where you're having it all. And so much in our society, people look at only the standard of living. And particularly, you know, if you look at all of our politicians and policies, a lot of it's about money and income. And you're not really measuring those things that matter most, which are how we experience life. I mean, there's many, many people that don't make a ton of money that are much happier than people that make a lot of money. So flourishing means having it all. And that's those three different elements, subjective well-being, objective well-being, and growing in a way that's meaningful to you as a person individually.
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting that you need to have three positive experiences to every negative one. So that's something that people can think about. And I guess if you have more and more, four or five or six positive experiences, you get to be a happier person.
Yeah, the more positive experiences you have, the more resourceful, creative, thinking outside the box, or resilient. There's so many different positive results of positive emotions. And you know, sometimes in our society there's a little bit of, what's the right term? There's a little bit of resistance to happiness. I had a guy walk out of one of my workshops once that said this happiness stuff won't go over here in Boston. It sounds like a California cult to me. But actually, it's a worldwide movement, the positive psychology movement. And it is because they found that happy people are more productive, they're more cooperative, they make more money, they're healthier. There's just so many things that when you have that 3-to-1 or more, you're really on what's referred to as an upward spiral of flourishing. And when it's below 3-to-1, you go on a downward spiral of languishing. So we really do need to manage our lives to optimize our positive emotional states and the experiences we have through each day.
You know, I read a lot in your book about the effects of stress. I think that'd be important to chat about right now. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I experienced the impact of stress firsthand because my dad, who was an orthodontist, the German, who was a pretty hardcore guy, he just drove himself and was very out of touch with his own emotional needs. And he did not like what he did, and he got tremendous stress. He got bad arthritis, and it, he was a little shy of his 53rd birthday. He died from really complications from all these, you know, chronic lifelong stress. So what I found in my research for my book is there's really kind of three different you know, things that are affect you or three different times. In the short run, even mild stress makes us less adaptable and resourceful. It makes us tight and we pull in. And because of that, we kind of lock up, and we don't adapt to situations. We don't evolve. We don't grow. And it also reduces our immune system. So it makes us, you know, less productive and adaptable, and screws up our immune system. And that opens up to all kinds of diseases and problems. And that's just in the short term. In the midterm, if you have chronic stress, it typically will lead to depression, where you just, you know, you throw in the towel. I can't take it anymore. And that's where you go into a catatonic state, and you don't even want to get out of bed. You disengage from life if your life is too stressful. So that's short. That's midterm. And then long term, what happened to my dad is when you have chronic stress for years, and it really never stops, it just wears down all of your bodily systems, your organs. It prevents your cells from regenerating, and it totally compromises your immune system. So almost every major disease is either caused by or is complicated and made worse through stress. So heart disease, particularly heart attacks and stroke, two of the biggest killers in America, are very closely aligned with too much stress. So a little bit of stress, you know, is not bad, but so many people I've seen, and it's particularly the people I've worked with, they put up with stress believing that that's the price they pay to be, quote, successful. And I think if you read that chapter in the book, you'll go, oh my gosh, whatever I do, I got to reduce my stress and minimize it and be conscious of the fact that even though I'm not aware of it, it is wearing me down, making me sick, and it's ultimately probably going to kill me if I don't get out of this stressful situation.
It certainly will pay us to learn how to eliminate stress. But, you know, you also say in the book that a little bit of stress can be good. And I think you call it eustress. And now what exactly is eustress, and how does that differ from the stress that we've just talked about?
Right, the sort of technical terms are distress versus eustress. Eustress is good stress. And good stress is that type of stress that I felt this morning before we got on the call, where you're psyched up, you're excited about something. Whether it's a radio interview you're going to do, a speech you're going to deliver, eustress will keep you up at night studying for a test. It will get you to prepare for contests. It's those butterflies in your stomach you feel before going on stage. So eustress, or I love to ski, so the eustress is when you're looking down a steep mountain you're about to, you know, ski down. You got those little butterflies, that little excitement. But what it does is it puts you in that optimal state of arousal, of excitement. And it sharpens your mind. It prepares you for success. So eustress is just a slight amount of stress, but it's a little different than the stress that you experience that's the bad stress. Because the main thing with eustress is it sharpens your focus, it sharpens your attention, charges up your energy and your tightens your muscles and so on. But the main thing that's different about it is it dissipates very quickly after that event's over. Whereas chronic stress has a tendency to release a lot of distress, bad stress. It releases stress hormones, cortisone, into your system. And these stress hormones then stay in your system, and they don't dissipate typically. Whereas with eustress, they go away. So there's really no negative impacts of eustress. It's all good. It's part of the same physiological mechanisms in our body, but it's the good aspects of stress as opposed to the negative aspects of stress.
So we'll learn to balance that by reading all the good stuff you have in your book.
Yeah, you can. You want to use eustress. It's actually a very, very exciting feeling, you even get eustress. If you win the Nobel Prize, you will be stressed. You will be excited. You'll be energized. But it's going to be a good type of stress, as opposed to, you know, if the proverbial bear comes out of the woods chasing you, that's going to be a different type of stress than winning a prize or taking a test or being on a radio interview like this, where it makes you feel good.
Well, if I ever win the Nobel Prize, I'll let you know how it feels. Anyway,
you
talk about in your book about upgrading your personal operating system. Can you tell our listeners what that is, what the personal operating system is?
Yeah, the personal operating system is my term, since we're in sort of the information era. A personal operating system is really your values, your beliefs, your worldview, and very particularly your mental models, how you believe the world works. And I call it a personal operating system because primarily it's programmed into your brain after you're born. So it's the from your culture, your parents, your upbringing and so on, you develop certain attitudes, certain worldviews about how the world works. But these aren't hardwired into your body, into your brain. They're adaptable. They can change. So your personal operating system is what determines how you react to different situations, how you live your life, and essentially it's the foundation for the interface between you as an individual, your inner life, and then the outer world. So the thing about your personal operating system, which is so important, is that scientists have found that the vast majority of your happiness that you can control is determined by your attitude, your opinions, your beliefs, which then lead to your behavior. So if you want to change your happiness, your positivity ratio, which is 3-1 or more, which we talked about earlier, the fastest and easiest way to upgrade that is to change your attitudes and your beliefs. Now, I'm not going to tell you it's super easy to change your attitudes and beliefs, but it's a lot easier to change the way you look at things and approach life than it is, say, to instantly change your income if you're in a situation where you're not making enough, or to change your life situation. So your personal operating system is really the key thing that you can change, and if you can, you upgrade it, and I believe you should upgrade it based on the science of human flourishing. In other words, if you are going to change your attitudes, your beliefs, and reevaluate, say, how you prioritize your values, you should do that based on scientific research of what works and what will help you flourish. So the whole idea of upgrading your personal operating system is getting up to speed on what scientists know about positivity, flourishing, happiness, success, and then upgrading the way you think so that you can apply those better ways of thinking in your life, and then you'll get better results, which means you'll flourish.
You know, speaking about the scientific studies, you've learned a lot from positive psychologists like Barbara Fredrickson and Marty Seligman. Can you tell us how these people have inspired you and actually changed your or upgraded your work?
Yeah, huge. It's really huge. You know, I've been in the investment industry as a consultant now for 25 years, and the investment industry is sort of unique in that there is definitely one metric for success, and that's money. And I'm fortunate to work with a small number of financial advisors that believe in a more holistic approach. But when I started reading and meeting and going to conferences and so on with the positive psychologists, it was completely a breath of fresh air. In the early 90s, I read Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi's book on flow, The Psychology of Optimal Experience. And that opened my mind to the fact that there were people out there, scientists, that were studying positive emotional states. That was a huge day of excitement. Or when a friend of mine gave me that book and I looked at it and I recognized that, hey, here's somebody that's doing scientific research on optimal life experiences. And so that was extremely exciting. And I eventually met Mihaly. We call him Professor Mike. We've had lunch a couple times, talked with him at conferences. And the thing that really strikes me is they're very much into helping other people and making a positive difference in the world. And that was so different from what I'd sort of gotten used to as normal in my industry, which was all the conversations were about making more money. So the huge thing, I think it validated a lot of what I believed intuitively made sense. And then I started, you know, reading the scientific studies, and certainly Barbara Fredrickson made a huge impact with her understanding of the difference between positive emotions and negative emotions. And then I also took a six-month class from Marty Seligman, who was the founder of the positive psychology movement. And every week we spent an hour. So just being around these folks, their energy, their values, their caring, and their willingness to help other people was a breath of fresh air. And it made me, I think, more consciously aware of the fact that that what I was doing was on the right track, but maybe only working with financial advisors was not the smartest thing. And so since working with them, I've definitely branched out and started working with what I refer to lovingly as civilians, people that aren't in the investment industry. So they were hugely impactful on me, both just being there. I remember one meeting I went to with Marty Seligman was there, and he's a very, very busy and high-profile person. He pretty much spent the whole event. It was a three-day positive psychology summit, sitting at a table in an open lobby available to everyone. And for the most part, he would just mentor students. They would come up and they would talk to him, and he would talk to them about, because I was sitting at the same table, he would talk to them about projects they were working on. He just spent the whole 3 days helping other people. And I thought, oh my gosh, these are the kind of people I really connect with. These are the types of people that make a positive difference in other people's lives. And that's what I've always wanted to do. So they were very, very powerful role models for me.
Oh, great, Steve. Now, before the break, I wonder if we can fit in a quick story about your favorite client, that somebody that you've really helped turn their entire life or business around.
Yes. I have one client that I worked with for a couple of years who's become a good friend, who I met actually through another friend on a ski vacation. And he's a financial advisor, and we were skiing in Alta, and we were riding the lift one day, and he asked me, hey, Steve, if I hire you as a consultant to help me build my business, how much extra money can you help me make each year? And I said, well, gosh, I really don't know. His name was Barry. I said, Barry, I don't really know because I don't know you that well, but I can tell you if we work together that I'll not only help you increase your income but also your quality of life. Well, there was a long pause, and we were riding the lift, and I was just quiet, and then he goes, well, Steve, you got to realize I'm very, very bottom-line oriented. And so this quality of life stuff's not that important to me. I said, well, I know, but the way I've developed my business now is that the quality of life and making more money, they work synergistically. I can't really separate them. I do it all, and that's just the way the process works now. That's after I, met Toby and made this change. So Barry says, well, okay, if this quality of life stuff doesn't, reduce or impact my income, then I'll hire you. Well, so, it was like, okay, as long as it doesn't get in the way. Well, now if you talk to Barry, this is about 10 years later, his income has, oh my gosh, I mean, Barry was making about $1 million a year. Now he's making about $4 or $5 million a year. His income's gone through the roof. But the reason it did is that he shifted his thinking. And what happened with Barry is he started to realize he's really a coach at heart, and he started to realize that he liked helping people. He got more endorphins from helping people than from making money. So he got rid of his Porsche, he cut back a lot of his expensive lifestyle, and he started focusing more on helping people and helping them discover what they really wanted to do when they grew up, which is kind of what I always do, our joke, and helping them use their money, their resources, to create the quality of life that they really love. Many of his clients are retired. Well, what happened is his income went through the roof because as he started helping his clients get clear on what they wanted to do and then help them do that, guess what his clients started to do? They started to refer them to their family, their friends, their colleagues, not to help Barry, but so that Barry could help their friends and the people they cared about the same way he helped them. So what Barry found out is that by helping people achieve more of what they want in their lives, that he got more endorphins, but he also made a lot more money. And that's where that synergy came in, where you could have it all, you can do it both. But it took a little while and a little shift. But today, Barry is extremely happy, has an amazingly high quality of life, and he's making more money than ever. So he's definitely a great success story of someone that resisted at first and now has totally embraced this whole concept of endorphinomics.
Sounds perfect.
That's actually quite amazing. As we take the break, it reminds me of, you can get anything that you want out of life as long as you give everything that everybody else wants out of life. Make sure.
Yeah, that's really the key, isn't it? Definitely the key.
We're going to take another break right now. When we come back, we'll talk more with Steve. You can ask Steve a question after the break. You can do that several ways. First, you can call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or you can also send us an email at radio@betterworldians.com or tweet us a question at twitter.com/betterworldians. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Be part of a miracle this holiday season. Visit ColorWithKindness.com and watch an uplifting 2-minute video that illustrates the power of kindness. When the video reaches 1 million views, funds will be released to Cure International for surgeries enabling 10 kids to walk for the first time. Cure is the largest provider of reconstructive surgery to disabled children in the emerging world. Give these kids the gift of a lifetime. Watch and share the video at ColorWithKindness.com.
How can we make it a better world?
I think we can make it a better world if we had peace among each other.
Everybody needs to help their neighbor, and then it will spread from then on.
I should do more.
I could do more. I spend so much time on Facebook.
How much time do I spend on Facebook?
Probably more than I should be spending.
I would definitely get back if I could find the time.
Now you can help others just by playing a game on Facebook. It's called A Better World. Share your hopes and dreams. Do good deeds. Make a difference. And have fun. Become a Better Worldian. Join a community where all good deeds get rewarded. Log in today to find out how you can make a difference every day.
For more information, visit facebook.com/abetterworld.
Ask the experts. Call toll free right now. 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Better Worldians Radio with a family team of Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. To connect with the show today, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send us an email to radio@betterworldians.com. Now, back to Better Worldians Radio.
Hi, we're back with Steve Mower, author of Endorphinomics. We'd love it if you call us in with a question for Steve. You can call us at 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Or if you prefer, you can also email at radio@betterworldians.com or tweet us at twitter.com/betterworldians.
Hi, Steve. This is Greg.
Hey, Greg.
You know, I was thinking a few minutes ago when you were talking about eustress and the importance of that, of a story, if you wouldn't mind, to tell you quickly from about a year and a half ago. My buddy was getting married, and we were kind of on the way to the ceremony, and he was telling me how nervous he was, and his heart was mm-hmm. pounding. You know, and I was actually, the funny thing is, really nervous too, because I was doing the ceremony. It was a pretty big wedding. And as I sit there, the two of us kind of freaking out in the car, I said, you know, dude, this is life flowing through us. You know, this is a very special thing that's happening. And when you're talking about eustress, it occurred to me that a lot of times I wonder if people just can't tell the difference. This isn't something bad that they're experiencing. This is something that's motivating them to do great things. I was hoping you could talk about that.
Well, you know, a huge part of what I do, I think, is help people make distinctions. And that's a really important distinction between when you feel those experiences, is that negative or is that positive? And, you know, there's a little saying for speakers, when you feel butterflies in your stomach, you want to get them all flying in formation. So, yeah. In other words, being consciously aware that this is a good thing, it's a natural process physiologically, but you then kind of control that and manage that and direct that energy as opposed to freaking out. So I would say that, you know, just being consciously aware of many different things. Like, one of the big things that I do with my clients is I make them consciously aware of their emotional states and of the people that they're working with, their clients' emotional states. And as soon as that happens, they can see the big problem with a lot of financial advisors, they get way too technical, and then the clients go into a negative trance and hopefully off to Hawaii or someplace else where the advisor's giving them all this information that they don't really know what to do with. But they can see it in their face. So I think the whole idea here is be consciously aware of your emotions, of your states, and be aware when that's good and when that's bad. If it's too much negative stress, you want to back off, you have to do something else. If it's good stress, then try to manage it in a way that's going to be most productive for what you're accomplishing at that time.
Sure. I have to imagine it's related to what you talk about in terms of identifying values in order to understand what you want out of life.
Yeah, you know, in the Western culture, we have very, very little orientation towards self-introspection and knowing ourselves. It's very, very external society or culture, and it's very focused on activity, activity, activity. And so many years ago, I started to realize that people were making decisions that were completely out of alignment with anything they wanted. And I was wondering, well, where do these come from? And oftentimes they come from external sources, their companies, their parents, their spouses, or whatever. But, you know, we all have 24 hours a day. And so without values that are clear, we don't know how to prioritize that time. So I look at values as a very specific type of belief. And what values do is they tell us what's important, and they help us prioritize. When people are living in alignment with their values, and I used to do workshops and would ask my people in the workshops, you know, how do you feel when you live in alignment with your values? Empowered, you know, strong, happy, honest, authentic, all these terms come out. And then you say, well, what happens when you're not in alignment? You're acting in out of alignment with your values. And you say, you know, depressed, sneaky, bad, you know, all these other terms come out. Well, what I found is if you're not consciously aware of your values, there's no way that you can consciously live in alignment with them.
Sure.
So one of the simple exercises, and I have it in my book, and you can certainly get it other places online, is you simply, you know, if you ask someone what are your values, they're kind of like deer in the headlights. But you say, in my case, here's a list of 66 positive values that I identified through research. You know, check off the ones that resonate with you, and then go back and prioritize Then once you prioritize your values and you know what's important to you, then you can start living your life more consciously so that you're living in alignment with those things that are important. You can organize your time. You can cut back into things that don't support things that you like to do or that you feel are meaningful, and then do more of the things that are meaningful. So that's, I think, again, it's a conscious awareness, but, again, it's introspection. It's taking a bit of time. It's thinking about these things, and then it's knowing. To me, it's knowing human nature. It's knowing your own nature. It's knowing universal human nature. And that, it really, a huge part of happiness and flourishing is knowing, you know, your personal powers or strengths, your values, what lights you up. And once you understand these things consciously and you do an inventory of them, I call that your endorphin data, by the way, the things that create endorphins in your life. And then you can start trying to organize your life and making conscious decisions as you grow and evolve that will align your life more and more with those things that really work for you and put you in what I call the endorphin zone, that positive emotional state.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. At one point, you quote Daniel Gilbert's concept of miswanting, you know, chasing something we think is going to make us happy but doesn't. And you talk about it as kind of a hedonic treadmill, you know. And, you know, I think we get into these patterns of thinking that this is going to make us happy when really we're just trying to fill a hole we've created in ourselves, you know.
Right. There's, you know, we consume food, get energy, and we have a information processing system in our brains. So that energy is then used at, we direct ourselves in different directions. But what I believe, particularly after studying more about positive psychology and neuroscience and so on, is that we have a lot of miscues on terms of what we think will make us happy. And, you know, different societies believe in different things. And our society is very focused, and the more you study this, the more you realize the American society is very focused on extrinsic rewards, money, power, fame, image, and those types of things. But all the research indicates that those aren't really the things that bring us happiness. So we have a whole culture that's focused really on external materialistic types of things, and that's one reason America is definitely so wealthy and successful. But the things that really make us flourish and bring us true joy in life are deeply connecting with other people, personal development, staying physically fit, you know, basically doing those things that are more intrinsically rewarding to us as a person as opposed to trying to prove that we're worthy to other people or meet some sort of external goals. And I see this a lot in the brokerage firms. Like, for instance, Toby was held up as a hero because he had made the most money in that firm. I never, ever went to one of these conferences, guys, where there was some evaluation of the person that had the best quality of life. We just don't seem to do that very much in America.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Yeah, I know you mentioned that in addition to values to kind of get you off this treadmill and get you on track, you have to have, you say, a positive vision, you know, for the future. Why is that additionally important?
Well, the vision thing is really critically important. You know, in the Bible, thousands of years ago, the Old Testament, it said that people without vision will perish. And now modern scientists are realizing how true that is. When scientists interview people who try to commit suicide who live through it, the survivors of suicide attempts, and they ask them, why did you try to commit suicide? It's not because they anticipated a terrible future in front of them. The reality was the common denominator was that they didn't anticipate any positive expectations for the future. So the way our brains work is that we need to have something that we're looking forward to or we get very depressed. In fact, it's interesting that people get so depressed that there's not something to look forward to that some of them try to attempt suicide. So in reading that, I have a tendency to look at things and say, well, what's the flip side of that? So I realized, well, if without a vision people get depressed and sometimes so bad that they try to take their own lives, what happens if they have a vision? And if you have a positive vision of where you're going that you're excited about, and what I do is I help people gather their endorphin data in the different domains of their lives, their values, their interests, their passions, and their strengths and skills. We actually document what works for them, and then we create a positive vision around that. And then they can move towards the vision. And it turns out that when you have a positive vision, like think about this. If you've ever planned a vacation, I went to the Amazon in 1999 for the first time. And for 6 months before that, I was eustressed. You know, I was so excited. I was I was psyched up. I was buying stuff. I was looking at maps. I was in a, you know, just a very positive mood. I was anticipating this incredible experience. And so when you're anticipating positive experiences, you go into a very positive emotional state. In fact, oftentimes, strangely enough, you have more positive emotions oftentimes before an experience than during it.
Yeah.
So the power of a vision to keep us focused on where we're going, to put us in positive states, is really amazing. And then there's one last thing that's critically important. People either move towards pleasure or away from pain, in a simple way of saying that. But those are the only two operating systems or motivating systems, towards something or away from something. Well, if you don't have a positive vision of where you're going, the only thing you can possibly do is move away from things you don't want.
That's a great point.
The problem there is it's very common people will move out of the frying pan into the fire.
Yeah.
They move away from something they don't like, only to find out it's worse. And I have a good friend that was in sales, and he got a boss who was a terrible boss, a new boss, decided to leave. I'm out of here. This guy's a jerk. But he took a job that had a much, much bigger sales territory, and he traveled and was away from home a lot at night, and he had a new family, a new baby. Well, that lowered his quality of life. It didn't raise it. And that was very much because he didn't have a clear vision of what he wanted. He only knew what he didn't want. And that's why a positive vision of where you're going, what you want, what your life looks like in the future is critically important if you want to flourish.
Well, speaking of looking forward and where we're going, you know, one powerful piece of advice that you give in the book I thought was very powerful was that people should think about how they'd like to be remembered. If you could just say something about that.
Yeah, it's really helpful in many cases to put yourself into the future and look back. And if you think about your funeral, your eulogy, what will people be saying about you? And, you know, most of us don't want to say he was a horrible jerk. We're glad he's dead. The world's better off without him. That's probably not, but many people, again, don't think so consciously of what people might say about them. But when you put yourself into the future and you think back about your life, about what meaning your life had for other people, and ultimately, I believe we're all here to serve other people. And I think the scientific research indicates that that's true, because the more you help other people, the more you give, the more you contribute to the well-being of others and actually of the planet, of Mother Earth as well, all the beings on the planet, not just humans, the happier you are. So if you think about, what do you want to have said about yourself, and you write that down. I want people to say he helped a lot of people become successful and happy, thousands, millions. I want to have as big of an impact as possible. So it really helps you, it gives you a frame of reference for thinking about what you want your life to be about, and that helps you, hopefully, helps you create your life's purpose. It's an exercise we use to help create a life's purpose, and then you work backwards from the future. Well, what do I have to do to get people to say that about me when I'm no longer around? And that's that eulogy, and that's so really critically important to think, what is my life about, and then start taking action to make that happen.
Well, we only have about one more minute, so I hate to give you only that short amount of time for this question, but one thing we ask all our guests is, how can people take what they learn in your book and not just improve themselves, but help make it a better world?
Well, if people take any information useful from this interview, or if they decide to buy the book and read it, the most effective thing they can do is to teach others. Because teaching others not only contributes and helps and puts other people in positive states, but the teacher always learns more than the students. So I always encourage people, if there's anything I've done to help you that's made your life better, share that with other people. Help them the same way. It's paying it forward kind of concept. And for most of us, helping other people, teaching them, coaching them, encouraging them, sharing some of the insights and the distinctions that we've been talking about today, will enhance their quality of life, and it'll actually help you even more. So it's an unbelievable win-win situation when you take what you know and what you've learned to help you flourish and share that with others.
Well, Steve, I wish we had more time. Very quickly, how can people find out more about Endorphinomics and the services you offer?
Well, Endorphinomics right now is available only on Amazon.com, both in Kindle or hard copy. My website, EndorphinZone.com, will be up and running in a week or two, but it's not running at this point. You can also go to my Facebook, Steve Moeller, my Facebook site. But the book is available right now on Amazon only. It will be in bookstores in June.
Steve, this has been an amazing interview. I was wanted to make a personal comment that you also mentioned in your book the use of role models to sort of help you to inculcate and think about the idea of your vision and where you're going. So who are the people you want to role model? And right behind my office, I have actually some of the books of people whose autobiographies or biographies I see as role models. One of them is Steve Jobs, and another one's Walt Disney, just to mention a few whose roles in life and their use of imagination has changed the world.
Yeah, Disney is also one of mine, so that's great.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. Steve, once again, I'd like to thank you for joining us on Better Worldians today. Join us, please, next week on the – so thank you, Steve, and from all of us here at the Better Worldians.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
For our listeners, please join us next week on Better Worldians Radio. We'll be talking to Tom Ziegler, the son of Zig Ziegler, about his work following in his father's footsteps. We also have an excellent lineup of guests in the coming weeks. And if any of you know an unsung Better Worldian who would make a great guest on our show, you can send us an email at radio@betterworldians.com. We'd also like to remind everyone that you can also be part of a miracle by simply sharing our video challenge and help heal 10 disabled children. It's that easy. Just go to colorwithkindness.com, watch the video, and share it with your friends. Give these kids the gift of a lifetime. Once again, thank everyone for joining us today, for listening. You can join the Better Worldians community at betterworldians.com. And until next time, everyone, be a better worldian.
Thank you again for helping make the world just a little bit better this week. Please join your hosts, Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel next Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope we've inspired you to do one small thing to help make a big difference. Join us at BetterWorldians.com to tell us what you've done to change the world.